You're listening to a 95 BFM podcast.
Hasta la vista, movies.
It's B-Movies, thanks to Metze Bar, your source for all things NZIFF, thanks to the best place to go before or after.
It is indeed. And it's the first of our B-Movies, which is very exciting, and we've got Simon Koldrick in studio. Kia ora, Simon, how are you?
I'm good, thank you for having me.
It's lovely to have you up here. You are one of the two directors, along with Charlotte Purdy. You're also the editor of By the Balls, which is a documentary about the Cavalier Tour, amongst sort of other things around this, in the 80s, and sort of rugby and New Zealand politics and history, I guess. It's a lot of things kind of rolled into one.
It is. It's really the story starts 2 years before the inaugural World Cup in 87, and we follow a different time in All Blacks history, I think it's fair to say.
I think it totally is. What I found like I kind of took away from watching this movie was that I'd heard this story but never as the focus of the story, if you know what I mean. I'd heard about the Cavaliers Tour, which was the rebel tour of South Africa in 86.
Yes, that's 86, right, yep.
Yeah. But I'd never heard it sort of taken from the inside out, because there's some amazing interviews in this documentary with some of the players who went and didn't go as well.
Yes, this film is told by some All Black legends who were basically participating during that period, and it is from their mouths. So
yeah,
it very much is the inside track on what happened.
So give us a bit of background. This is kind of post-1981 Springbok tour. So the country had been very divided about having the Springboks come and play in New Zealand, and then there was the opportunity for the All Blacks to go over to South Africa and play over there. And it was shut down basically by a bunch of different things. The government didn't support it. The New Zealand Rugby Union wanted to send people over, and then a couple of lawyers basically put an injunction against it and stopped the All Blacks from being able to go over. But then you get this rebel team.
Well, that's right. I mean, if it seems like they hadn't learned the lessons of 81, and the rugby union were still of the mind that sport and politics don't mix, and decided to go ahead in 85 with the tour, and were talking to the South Africans. But I think the public made it very clear they didn't want this to happen again.
Yeah.
The government certainly weren't in support of it, but a lot of the rugby players and some who participated in the film, you know, they wanted the opportunity to go and play South Africa.
Mm.
South Africa were seen as, you know, one of the pinnacles of their rugby career, so they didn't really think about the ramifications of what they wanted to do. So,
and that's a really interesting point of where sort of competitiveness overrides maybe what they feel like other the public might think, or what, you know?
Well, I think, I mean, we all hear about bleeding for the jersey, and very much, you know, those guys were just all about playing for the All Black shirt.
Yeah. I was really struck because I hadn't realised it was still when it was amateur as well, so they weren't being professionally paid to be rugby players. It was like an honour that you sort of wore as your, you know, amateur pride, I guess, as well.
Absolutely. These guys are still working. I mean, John Kerwin, who is one of the participants in the film, he was an apprentice butcher with his dad.
Yeah.
David Kirk was training to be a doctor. So, you know, these guys weren't being paid.
Mm.
And I think that's the other part of the story, is this was an amateur time.
Yeah.
So the idea of taking money to play the sport was a big no-no.
Yeah. And that's actually something that is kind of covered in this movie a little bit, without giving too many spoilers away for people, because there's a few things that are kind of revealed in this that I don't know necessarily have been discussed in the public before in New Zealand. There's been a lot of conjecture about if the Rebel Tour took money to go over, and a lot of things like that. And that's kind of confronted by these players in the documentary in a way that I'm not sure necessarily has been discussed publicly before.
No, as you say, there's been a lot of conjecture, a lot of rumours, and we show some clips of some of the sort of talk shows and things talking about what they thought was going on, whether they were being paid. I don't want to give the story away,
no,
because I want people
we
to
won't.
Go and see it. Yeah.
Exactly. And it is what I found really fascinating about this movie as well, is it is kind of one of those moments when you realise how much of, I guess, like a masculine idea of New Zealand identity is tied up with rugby in New Zealand. The sort of idea of we win and we lose as a country by the way we play our sport is really, really tied to this kind of South African conflict, I guess. And it comes through really strongly in the way that the different players, because you sort of focus on four different players, two who went on the Rebel Tour and two who chose not to, JK and David Kirk as well. Yeah. David Kirk, I just want to give him a hug. He was out there being, you know, he really was quite vocal about not wanting to go because he didn't want to be supporting apartheid systems and things like that, and he got a lot of shtick for it.
He did. I mean, I think we also have to remember we didn't live in an era of social media, and information wasn't so free and easy. I think David is very much a different kind of personality in terms of being an All Black rugby player. He says so himself in the film. And some of these guys weren't really aware of the ramifications of the politics. I just think they were focused on the sport they were playing, but it came back and bit them in the butt afterwards, obviously.
Yeah, totally. But it is fascinating because it's also the story of a group of men very tightly connected and the kind of, I guess, the challenges of those friendships too and those relationships being tested by this as well.
I mean, the team was absolutely divided over some of the decisions they made. And you had... out of the entire team that were talking about going to South Africa in 85, only two of them said no. And obviously that's JK and David. And it's fair to say there was a fair bit of fallout. And that would have split bonds and friendships, absolutely.
Mm. It's also a little bit of a story of mental health as well, because that's kind of discussed a bit. I mean, John Kirwan is obviously a huge advocate for discussing mental health and, you know, supporting people's mental health. But that seems to be a bit of a thread that comes through as well, as this was a time when... I guess these were the starts of some kind of conversations, or very, very early stages of conversations about how things like rugby and sport and stuff do also impact, you know, your mental health and your relationships and things like that. It's an interesting sort of genesis point, I think.
Yeah, I think what we tried to do was pick up at the start of John's kind of awareness of where he was at with his mental health issues. And I mean, we also have to remember these guys, although they weren't professionals, that the amount of pressure, because like you said, you know, the All Blacks were the heroes of the country. You know, whatever they did, the country responded appropriately. You know, they didn't like it when they lost, but they loved them when they won.
Yeah, absolutely.
So massive pressure, and also just to keep your place in the team and all those things. So you can imagine. I can't imagine what it's like being a professional sportsman, but you know, you've got to perform and deliver. And John obviously had some issues around that. I will say there's a moment where he talks about not being able to do certain things, and he gets huge payoff when he plays Italy in the World Cup, and it's a great moment for
me.
Were you a rugby fan to begin with? So what was the drive for you to be a part of this film?
Oh, I've always been a rugby fan. English, I have to confess. But it doesn't mean I have huge respect for these guys. I mean, I think David Kirk's a bit of a hero. I mean, they all are. They're absolute legends. But yeah, I played as a schoolboy.
Yeah.
And was it quite like shocking for you making this film, or did you already have an interest in the topic and the history of it?
I didn't know a lot of things. There were many revelations.
Yeah.
And I think it'll surprise a lot of people what comes out of these guys' mouths.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. I was really, really surprised because it's quite candid. You know, I wasn't necessarily expecting that kind of candor about things like someone's actually just texted in to say, no one ever talks about this side of the South African, New Zealand stuff. Amazing. And it is actually amazing because you don't really hear these conversations that often.
No, and another area we look at is the antagonism between the French and New Zealand as well. This is a period where we had the Rainbow Warrior bombings, obviously the nuclear testings. And we kind of use that to show the tensions between nations.
Yeah.
So when the All Blacks go and play the French, obviously that really spices things up.
It does, yeah. I was also shocked actually by just some of the footage of those games were really rough, like really rough games of rugby. Not just by normal standards. They're quite like brutal, some of those.
Yes. I think it's fair to say that the game has a few more rules than it did then.
Yes.
I was going to say, how do you feel like the history of this game, especially from what you've learned and what people who see the film will learn, has sort of changed, or is there still sort of that history creeping in?
I think, as I say, it's a very different time. You know, I was thinking, would the All Blacks of 87 beat the All Blacks today?
That's a good question.
And I think if they played in 87 rules, they would.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. I also love, it's kind of a bit of a history of the genesis of the haka in rugby as well, and Buck Shelford's sort of involvement in that too. It's a really interesting turning point, I think, for the way we know the sport and also the way we understand it as part of New Zealand kind of cultural identity as well, I guess. It's a really big moment of change in many, many ways. And it's really great. So if you're interested in any of these things, if you're interested in the politics of it, or if you're interested in rugby, I don't actually think you necessarily even need to be a rugby fan to get a lot out of this film, because it's a bit of our cultural history, you know?
Oh, we've worked very hard to make it as inclusive as possible and cover a lot of broad themes. And I'd say it's about the politics of the time, social history of the time. Rugby is the backdrop,
yeah,
but there's also some amazing rugby in there too.
I feel like you'd be pretty hard pressed to find a New Zealander that doesn't know something about some of rugby's history.
Exactly, yeah. And it's got some amazing archival footage too from that time as well, which I found really fascinating to watch. You know, people who you're very familiar with looking much, much younger.
Oh, yeah.
Much, much grainier.
I have to say, we had a team working on the archive, and it was a massive challenge. So thanks to Janine and Phoebe.
Oh, nice.
They it was unbelievable, because we talked about using a lot more sort of dramatic elements to the film, but what happened is they were unearthing all these gems and this gold.
Yeah.
That absolutely validated the story. When you see the Cavaliers players going off to South Africa, And the reactions they get and things, there's just moments where you go, wow.
You can't really recreate that even. That is drama in itself.
No.
You know?
Yeah. And also, I think you see how the All Blacks were treated by some of the public, you know, the feelings toward them. It's certainly not what you'd see today.
No, it's hugely, hugely intense emotional time as well. So people can go and see By the Balls. It is on at the ASB Waterfront Theatre on July the 24th and July the 25th. That's a Wednesday and a Thursday, 8:30 p.m. and 1:15 p.m. respectively. You can find all the ticket details on the NZIFF website. And this is going to be its premiere as well, basically, isn't it?
This is the world premiere, indeed.
The world premiere. Fantastic. Well, thank you so much, Simon Coldrick, for coming up and chatting to us about By the Balls today. It's a really interesting documentary, and I totally recommend people to go and check it out.
Thank you for having me.
Hey, Amelia.
Oh, hi.
How you going?
I'm excited to talk about cinema.
Cinema. We are on B-Movies at the moment. If you've just tuned in, we're talking about the NZIFF, which is about to start with gusto. And we're talking about one of the incredibly strange movies that's
You've got your film reviewing hat on instead of your top 10 hat on, don't you?
You know, I own a multitude of hats.
You're a woman of many hats.
Yeah, thank you. So this is basically a documentary about the movie Showgirls. Do you know about Showgirls?
I know about Showgirls, but I've never seen it.
Okay.
Same here.
So basically, in 1995, you've got Paul Verhoeven and Joe Esterhaas have just made Basic Instinct.
Okay.
And
yep.
Everyone's like, oh, okay.
Rightio.
Do you want more money to make something even more obscene? So basically, Paul Verhoeven had been making movies like Robocop.
Oh, yep.
Yeah.
Punk rock.
Yeah. Starship Troopers, that kind of thing. Very like intense, gory satire movies.
Got you.
And Joe Esterhaas. He wrote Flashdance.
Oh, I was like, why do I know Joey Stiles' name? That's why.
Because he's pretty wild. So one of the first things that happens in this movie is you get Joe Esterhaas saying, people say this movie's not about anything. It's about moral values and spiritual choices.
Okay.
Basically, so they got a lot of money to make a film, and it was like very high concept, and Paul Verhoeven basically wanted it to be this kind of like gritty expose of sex and lust in America, and so the movie is about
this is Showgirls, not RoboCop, eh?
So the movie is about Nomi Malone, played by Elizabeth Barclay from Saved by the Bell.
Nice.
Yes.
This is a bit of a handbrake turn in tone going on here.
Everything is a handbrake turn. So she basically is escaping from different places. Whenever someone asks where she's from, she yells different places.
The line different places, or she just lists the dairy.
Hey, Rachel, ask me where I'm from.
Where are you from?
Different places!
Oh, wow.
There's a lot of that in the film. And so she wants to become a showgirl.
Showgirl.
And so there's a lot of drama. She gets with Kyle MacLachlan.
Oh, nice.
Yep. There's a very unerotic scene in a pool. There's a bit where she throws beads under another dancer.
Is that because she's
to, like, crippled the dancer?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't they do that in God. Blades of Glory? Isn't that like?
In Blades of Glory, it's an homage to this.
Okay.
So there's all kinds of like full frontal nudity, strange relationships, lots of eating chips.
Are you team Showgirls or not?
I love Showgirls.
Okay, cool.
Showgirls is an incredible film.
Is it true that people either are or they aren't?
Well, so this is kind of... So basically, the idea of this documentary is that they... So they say at the end that essentially what the, like, the thesis of the film is. Like, a VO comes over and is like, who's right about Showgirls?
Right.
I think everyone's right about Showgirls. Basically, the documentary is clips from, like, Showgirls and, like, other... like Paul Verhoeven movies and lots of clips from lots of things, mm-hmm. and just various different kinds of critics, and there's someone who starred in a Showgirls musical. And there's Peaches Christ, who's a famous drag queen who started doing drag shows based around Showgirls.
That's very cool.
And they all kind of talk about Showgirls, and it's just kind of there's like a kind of a loose structure to the film based around. So when you were reading my notes, it said a masterpiece of. I believe we're not allowed to say this.
No, we're after nine now. You can say shit.
Shit. Master. So there's piece of shit, and then masterpiece, and then masterpiece of shit, which is categories from a book about Showgirls where they discuss it through different lenses.
The lens of is it a masterpiece of shit or just a piece of shit?
Yeah. So at the start of the film, you get some people who genuinely hate Showgirls.
Okay.
So it was hugely panned when it came out. It's a very tacky film.
See, you've sold me on it there. I'm like, tacky movie, hit me up. This sounds like my cup of tea.
So I think they're all... Yeah. And then so then it's like... It's a masterpiece. People talking about how it's like the best thing ever.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the end, like how it's a little bit of both.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the film kind of touches on a lot of different things. I think possibly the
We're talking about Showgirls or You Don't Know Me?
You Don't Know Me.
You Don't Know Me, okay.
So it touches on a lot of different things. I think potentially the most interesting and probably how most people are finding out about Showgirls now is through like the queer community.
Mm-hmm.
So RuPaul's Drag Race talks about Showgirls a lot. A lot of the hits out there watch RuPaul's Drag Race. That's probably how they're coming into contact with Showgirls.
Right.
And so there's a lot of discussion about like camp and like failed seriousness. And they took up Mummy Dearest, which is a biopic of Joan Crawford that is huge with the gays, and Valley of the Dolls. And they talk about Judy Garland and how this kind of narrative of like the child star doing like the kind of raunchy sex drama.
Oh gosh.
Which is essentially, you know, because it's the not the nerdy one from Saved by the Bell. What is she? She's like the uprights. She's like the...
She's the kind of prissy one. She's the sort of like uptight one.
She's the one who's constantly protesting for feminism.
Yeah, which is great, you know?
Yeah.
But like there's, you know, maybe not where you'd expect her to go after that into Showgirls.
Or a little bit exactly, like, you know, it's
a little
like,
bit almost, it's a tale as old as time.
You remember when Spring Breakers came out? You know, it's that, very much that kind of a thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it's quite an interesting documentary. You get to hear a lot of different people talk about Showgirls.
Does it, because it's like a whole bunch of different people's opinions essentially on a film, does it sway one way or the other? Or is it kind of leaves you at the end to be like, oh, this is what I agree with and this is what I don't?
See, it doesn't really. So there's like, people will say things and then sometimes another voice will come in that's almost like a comment on what that person was saying.
Right, yeah.
But other times things are essentially unchallenged. And I think this is a little bit of a problem for the film at some points.
Okay.
Because, so I know I've talked about how incredible Showgirls is. It is a film that has some gratuitous sexual assault in it.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
That's not great.
And so,
at all,
so
really.
The discussion of that in You Don't Know Me is a little bit uncomfortable because there are a few different perspectives on it and they're not in dialogue with each other. And
so it
feels a little bit awkward. But I mean, aside from that, I really enjoyed it. There's some good bits where like someone will be like, going like, oh, and then, you know, it's craft, it's wonderfully expressionistic when Kyle MacLachlan is framed by the... And then it'll just be someone who's like, It's a gaudy, awful, terrible, terrible film. It's bland. It's boring.
I love that.
It's not even so bad. It's good. It's just dull. Which is really entertaining, I think. So yeah, someone describes it as the most pathetic film they've ever seen.
That's such a burn as well. That's not even like you've got any punch out of it. That's just, it's absolutely useless.
But I mean, there's so much to talk about with Showgirls because, I mean, it's a very like strange kind of janky exploitation movie. Directed by this very talented director who was given a lot of money to do it.
How much money?
$54 million.
Oh, chill.
To make Showgirls, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
That's crazy.
And so, yeah, I think...
And when was it? When did it come out? Was it
1995?
Yeah.
Around 1999, it started to develop like a bit of a cult following.
Right, got you.
Yeah, so...
$54 million in 1995 is like
a lot of money.
Yeah,
I mean, it's a lot of money now, but it's a lot of money then.
Yeah,
I mean, it was the year that Waterworld came out, okay. I actually quite like Waterworld. I feel like it's like a soggy Mad Max.
And this is an international. That You Don't Know Me is an international film festival movie, so it's not. It wasn't made in New Zealand.
No. So it's an American film. All the people who are talking are American, as far as I can say. And it's like, I think it's got a little bit of something for everybody. I think if you don't know anything about Showgirls, it would be a very interesting thing to watch.
I was going to ask, should you watch Showgirls first, do you think?
I think depending on how like well-versed you are in like camp and like things like that, if you're a person who has watched a lot of B-movies, if you're a person who loves Mummy Dearest, then just go ahead and watch Showgirls.
Yeah.
But if this is like a whole new world to you,
maybe watching the doco
this movie
first.
might be a really good primer.
You Don't Know Me first might be a good primer to then critically watch Showgirls, potentially, yeah.
So if you want to go watch You Don't Know Me, which is being screened as part of the New Zealand International Film Festival, you can go and check it out on July the 19th, July the 20th, or July the 30th at the Hollywood Avondale Event Cinemas and Event Cinemas in that order. You can find all the details for that on the NZIFF page. Also, if you do want to go and see Showgirls before you go and see You Don't Know Me, the Hollywood is also screening it on Wednesday the 17th of July. So if you wanted to
Showgirls in the cinema.
Showgirls in the literal cinema. You can go and see that and then 2 days later come back and watch You Don't Know Me at Hollywood as well. So you can really get all of everything
and
out of it.
And as we're nearing the end of the B-movie segment for today, I would say that it's good to start booking your tickets now.
Yeah, 100%.
They do, like, there are only these 3 screenings in the festival, so get in there.
Especially if you want to go to that Showgirl screening. Yeah. That, I mean, you might not have heard of it, but there are a lot of ravenous gays who have.
As you said, it's the room for gays. Yeah. So lots of people love this movie. Thank you very much, Amelia. How many stars would you give it out of 5 stars?
I mean,
or tomatoes, maybe.
I don't think it's the kind of thing that you would want to give like a straight up rating to.
No, you just want to say, go in with a pinch of salt, have a good time.
Yeah, because I mean, it's not like Cecil B. DeMille. It's quite arty the way that it's done. Like it's quite an interesting thing, and I think it's definitely worth examining.
You Don't Know Me, on at the New Zealand International Film Festival, directed by Jeffrey McHale. You can catch it, all the details about it, on the NZIFF website. Thank you thank you very much, Amelia. What is the song you've picked us to end on here?
It's Klaus Nomi with the Nomi song.
Seems fitting.
It's very fitting.
Oh, a bit of flute.
Oh. More flute. We had some flute earlier too.
It's a fluty day.
Bit of flirty flute.
I would have expected nothing less from you, Amelia. This is wild. Thank you very much. BFM Breakfast.
You've been listening to B-Movies, thanks to Mitzi Bar.
That was a 95BFM podcast. Support 95BFM with a B-card. Go to 95BFM.com/signup.